It's always about just like little tweaks you're going to make. And that was what I was doing, you know, being 5% better. And I was hosting so many events in the very beginning that I just had a lot more opportunities to get 5% better quickly. And so you add that up and it's exponential.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Lounge. If you're looking for flexible ways to earn income, grow your mindset, and live the lifestyle you've always dreamed of, you're in the right place. So lower the lights, grab your favorite beverage, and join your host, founder of NotaryCoach.com and Amazon best-selling author of Sign and Thrive, How to Make Six Figures as a Mobile Notary and Loan Signing Agent, Bill Soroka.
Cheers, and welcome to my next guest today, Robbie Samuels. He's a fellow multi-passionate entrepreneur recognized as a networking expert and an expert in digital event design. Robbie, thanks for being here.
So happy to be with you, Bill.
I've been looking forward to our conversation because, you know, since we first connected, I think it was 2017, right after your book was launched. The idea of being an expert in digital event design, I'm not even sure was around back then. The world has changed and you have reinvented your business. And that's what we're talking about today since then. Can you tell us more about what happened in March of 2020 for you and your business?
Well, as you know, prior to March of 2020, my focus for over a decade was teaching people how to network at conferences. And that was really because we all say the reason we go to events, the reason we get on planes, travel, is not just for the content, but for the possibility of making great connections. But in reality, we fail miserably in our follow through. So our intentions are high, our follow through are poor. And so I was working with both individual participants as well as organizations to help them design more engaging events. And that work became, let's just say, not needed in March 2020 when events became all virtual, when virtual events really became synonymous with events. So eye contact, business cards, shaking hands, body language, which had been the things I talked a lot about. I mean, I'd written a book about it, as you mentioned, a podcast for almost 5 years, did a TEDx, coaching on it, all gone. So my focus in March was, how do I show up and add value? That was a mantra for me. How do I show up and add value? We will remember people who showed up and added value. So I did have a little moment of hesitation. March 11th is when I think I accepted this was happening. March 13th, I met with my peer mastermind and they kind of kicked me in the butt and said, Robbie, you don't think of networking as a thing that only happens at events. I'm like, you're right. Like, you've built an amazing global network over the last 5 years. Why don't you just write something to help people do that? I'm like, oh, okay. That makes sense. It's the thing I can do. So I wrote 9 ways to network in a pandemic and I shared it on March 12th, which was Thursday, and it got a good response. And then that night I thought I should probably do one of these things. And I was looking at the list and on the list was host a virtual happy hour. And I'm a big proponent of hosting dinner gatherings at conferences. I'm always organizing dinners. I've organized dinners for conferences that were in my town that I wasn't even attending, but I had friends attending. So I thought I should do this. And I put out a note to one of these online communities I'm in. Hey, if I do this tomorrow, will you come? It was like 8 o'clock Thursday night. A couple of people said yes right away. So I was like, all right, it's happening. So the reason I've hosted a weekly No More Bad Zoom virtual happy hour every Friday at 5 o'clock Eastern is because I came up with the idea the night before. And that was my first open like opportunity. It wasn't like I did research about when to do it. You just do it. And within a few weeks, I came to realize this was a thing. By April 14th, I bought the domain, nomorebadzoom.com. And I also that week announced that I was going to be running a pilot 4-week program to help people improve their skills around virtual presentations and online facilitation and virtual event design. And that's because I had been fielding so many catch-up call, coffee chats, pick your brain calls in the last few weeks. And I knew as a coach, as a business strategy coach, to pay attention to that. And I knew I wasn't sustainable, even though I had nothing else going on because I didn't have a business. My business went away. Yeah. Even though all that went away, I knew it wasn't sustainable to just have those calls and that this was there was something I could offer as a group program And I did pilot it and I ran it 4 months in a row. 40 people went through it and it became a certification program. So that really was the beginning of that reinvention. And somewhere along the way, people started to realize I had these skills and wanted to hire me. So by the summer, people were hiring me and I had to stop running the Forward program briefly, served my clients all fall, hit six figures in eight months. And it's just been, it's been rolling along since then.
Yeah, that is insane. So you hit six figures as a Zoom producer within 8 months, just helping other people.
Yeah.
Teaching other people and running these Zooms.
It was a combination of multiple new revenue streams. So the weekly event's free and always has been. But then the 4 week program, you know, started out as a $500 pilot and then it went to $1,000 and then $1,500 and then $2,000, right? Like this year I ran it twice at $2,000. And it got better in that time. Like I have all this content now that people get access to. I have over 60 Zoom tutorial videos that I've created and shared online that I organize into a learning management system for people who take the program, right? They get access to it for weeks in advance and come ready to really dive into the topic. But I didn't have that initially. I had nothing pre-recorded for the first four. In fact, there was no mention on my website that I even did this for the first, 20 people that came into the program. For the first 20 people that came into the program, nothing on my website. And then I just made this like static homepage. Like I'm not a graphic designer, let's just say. And that's all I had. And I got a new website at the end of the Q1 2021. So I didn't wait to build a website. I didn't have a landing page. I just like told people I did this thing. I had a Google Doc. I had a Google Doc that explained what was in it. And that's how it's got started, you know, and it was like paying attention to what people needed. And partly I think I responded this way because I was also in the moment I was working with a company doing business strategy, and I was working with about 12 or 15 entrepreneurs a week on business strategy, like these year-long programs together. And so they were going through the same stages, right? Of trying to like go from ideation to product market fit, to lead generation, right? To, you know, higher conversion rates. And I was coaching them on that. So then they, you know, one of the other coaches started to just ask me questions about my process as like a learning. And I was like, yeah, I'm basically doing all that. And so I think I also wasn't tied to any outcome. What I'm not mentioning, Bill, the things that I tried that didn't work.
Yeah, right.
Right. Because there's plenty of revenue streams I attempted that like went nowhere quickly. But the point was that they quickly like went nowhere. And then I was able to go on to the next thing,
Yeah,
and
that's what
light touch piloting something. And then I got hired by some big companies. And now I only have a handful of event clients, but they have repeat work. It's been really great.
That's what really stands out with your story, though, is your number one, you were in the arena. You didn't tuck your head in the sand and worry about what's going to happen. You started adapting very quickly. And I think that was one of the keys for everything. You get down there and you start doing it. So you're coaching entrepreneurs probably on the best practices. But when your environment changed, the best practices have to shift too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that happened in that moment, like the early parts of the pandemic, is that there was nothing about failing because everybody globally, our world had shifted. So first of all, no one's paying attention to me, right? Everyone's self-focused because the world just rocked their horizon changed too, right? So there was no scrutiny, and anything you tried, people were grateful for the effort, like the openness to anything, which is why early on there was just so many virtual, what are those even called? Summits. There was like all these virtual summits because people were like, I want to offer a way to help, and this is a thing I know how to do. And it's like we were inundated by virtual summits, and I kept saying yes, but we're not missing content. We're missing community. We're missing connection. Summits as like dripped out content, which is what they traditionally had been, wasn't going to suffice. So one of my revenue ideas that didn't come to fruition was that I helped a few friends who I got interviewed, but then I also ran I guess you would call it like a happy hour or like a group discussion live where people got into breakout rooms based on different topics that they were interested in. And I thought, this would add a lot of value to whatever entrepreneur is running these summits, because then these are the people who would be even more keen to buy their products. But the entrepreneurs themselves were not flush with money. So you can have a great idea, but if you don't have the right audience, like I just heard a great analogy about like, you know, you could have the best hot dog stand in the world, but if you don't have a hungry audience, like, you know, doesn't matter. But if you have a starving audience, you can have a mediocre hot dog stand
and make millions.
I think that it wasn't the right fit. But it gave me an idea that people were craving this. And I kept trying to like figure out like, what's the hook here? How do I help? And ultimately, and now I'm going back to really just thinking through this process for other people. Like, I'm no longer working for that company, partly because I didn't have time. Like by December of last year, I worked every day past April except for Father's Day and Thanksgiving. I mean, it was just,
wow.
And Thanksgiving doesn't count because it doesn't end in Y. I mean, I work every day that ends in Y.
Right. Well, I love that. And the evolution doesn't start there. And I think you're hinting towards this right now is everything that you've learned with all your previous experiences as well. But this process of creating a product, launching it, even if you don't have a huge audience, is that the next step for you?
Yes. And I will also just say about kind of a in hindsight, it's inevitable that I ended up building the business I did. Mm-hmm. But in the moment, it felt anything but inevitable. And I want to mention this because I wrote an email about this. I write a weekly email. It's got a little story with a little business or life lesson, like a little twist in it. And I wrote at one point last year, I will tell you that prior to the pandemic, I did not identify as an MC. And I clearly am an MC.
Oh, yeah.
I did not market myself as an MC. I did MC roles, I would say MC-like roles, but I did not market that. And I have an interest in tech, not like heavy-duty programming, but I like technology as far as how it serves me or makes me more productive. And I've taught people how to use technology more efficiently. So this is all these little things that you sort of realize you have all these skill sets that no one ever valued before, you never valued before. So my first time I did the virtual happy hour, I facilitated online and it was okay, but people loved it because it was so much better than what other people had done. Mm-hmm. And the expectations for what people thought it was going to be and then what it turned out to be were so high. But I got to the end of the hour and was like, I'm not going to do that again. We basically went around in a circle, you know, everyone had their 3 minutes. But I knew how to keep things moving. The following week is when I opened breakout rooms for the first time. First time.
Wow.
First time. So I'm telling you that March 20th, 2020, I opened breakout rooms the first time, discovered that I had them because everyone didn't know. I didn't know. No one knew. And then by March, I'm selling a product. So that process of like listening to your audience and iterating and applying like a piloted, like minimally viable way, that is now the forward momentum for my work. I have still sort of this split vision in my business where I'm doing the virtual event design, the executive Zoom producing piece of it. That's happening. And then I'm also really digging deeper into my business strategy side. New book coming out in October. It's called Small List, Big Results, Successfully Launch a New Offer, No Matter the Size of Your Email List. And so I've got a multi-step launch plan that is with the book, but it also goes into a year-long mastermind that I'm selling. It's a premium product. But everything I'm doing this fall, which is going to be low cost and free content, is all about getting people to the point where they realize they need that. So I'm following my own best practice in a macro level while teaching it. It's very meta in a way.
Well, I mean, this is how things get done. I think there's this perception sometimes from those who haven't stepped into this arena quite yet, that we've got it all figured out and that we had this huge master plan from the very beginning. And that when you were 3 years old, you just knew you were going to all this experience was going to culminate into this, and you've got all the answers and you've got all the certifications. It's not, though. It's sometimes you're just figuring it out and piecing it all together. And I think you've got a great demonstration of that. And I also want to share too, is I'm amazed by your story, because you just shared in March, it was March 13th, 2020. Then it was just a couple weeks after that you're doing breakout rooms. And I had the pleasure of being a part of an event that you emceed and produced for us in November. So we're talking about 6 months later, and there are still people, here we are almost a year later, raving about that event and how it was the best online event they've ever attended. Not because of the content. The content was great, but it was fun. And everybody had Zoom burnout by that time anyway, right? They're just fried. And then the event that you led just inspired so much. It really reinvigorated online events for us again. So that exponential growth from when you first started this in March to being where you were just in November, and I can't even imagine where you are right now, is inspiring. And I hope that people hear this and realize that they can figure things out when the world shifts on them. Adapt, the ability to adapt is so key to this. So thank you for that part.
Well, something you're touching on that I want to underscore is the idea of continuous improvement, which in Japan they call Kaizen. And yes. I think this is so important. And before I knew the concept, like in the world, it was something that I was doing, and I was even teaching. In fact, the 4-week program that became the certification for virtual event professionals is called the 5% Advantage Program. And my wife, who's not an entrepreneur, was like, no one wants to only be 5% better. Like, what? That's not a good sales pitch. And I said, no. It's about being 5% better every time you host or speak online. Like every single time, like you touch this, you're going to get 5% better. It's always about just like little tweaks you're going to make. And that was what I was doing, you know, being 5% better. And I was hosting so many events for free, for my friends, for myself, for low money in the very beginning, that I just had a lot more opportunities to get 5% better quickly. And so you add that up and it's exponential. And so by November, I really did have, I mean, when I was first hired in, I was hired in August to do my first event. And I was still trying to foresee what it would look like. But when I got on the call with them, it was two guys who were like on the committee for this chapter of a national association. I was able to ask them all these questions that helped them figure out what they even needed. And that made me realize how much I knew.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know going into the conversation exactly how it was going to turn out, but I knew how to have a conversation about it that elicited from them what they even wanted, because they didn't have words for it. And that's when you start thinking, wow, you know, this is different. And so when I charge to host virtual events, to produce virtual events, to do the speaker prep, the training, all that stuff, I'm at a premium, you know, level, because what I'm offering is very different. I'm not just opening breakout rooms for people. And I actually signed a really big client in the end of 2020. And part of the process was they asked me via email, the client wants to know, it was like a third party hiring me. The client wants to know, can you put 10 people in a breakout room for 10 minutes and then put 5 people in a breakout room for 10 minutes later on in the same event? And I answered, yes, but I can't think of any circumstance where that would make sense. There are best practices about how do you use breakout rooms. And yeah, I would share that with you if the client was interested. And then they were like, can you tell us more? So I said, I have best practices on these like 6 things here all around breakout rooms. Let me explain this one in particular. And the other person that was vying for the job answered yes.
Oh, that was it.
Because technically, you can do it. Technically, you can do 10 people for 10 minutes and 5 people for 10 minutes. But I'm thinking strategically, what is the outcome of the time that you're spending with people? Like, what are you trying to achieve by doing this exercise? I'm a real fan of purpose-first design. Don't just like do this gadget you know, this plugin, this program, whatever. Don't just do it because you can. Like, how is it? So the strategy piece, which again goes back to the strategy piece for business, like, these are all skills I've developed over time, but I didn't value that the same way. Back when I had a BlackBerry and my friends would invite me to coffee and I would let them pick my brain, right? So so I think that we're all sitting on a lot of unrecognized talent. And we also, our other huge resource that is untapped is our network.
Yeah. How do we get over that? What were some of the things that you did to recognize that? Because I run into this a lot in my own coaching, is people, it's like they shut the door when they walk into a new opportunity and they leave those skills, all those things that made them amazing in the previous ventures or jobs, and then they start from scratch. How do we get through that?
The primary demographic that I work with one-on-one tends to be entrepreneurial women over the age of 50. Hmm. And a common thing that happens with this demographic, which I don't think is universal to just them, but I think is widely associated, is this idea that, like, now they're on the cusp of something new and they feel like a novice. And they, like you said, really aren't digging into the network they built for 20 or 30 years, aren't digging into the skills they've developed over 20 or 30 years. And me reminding them of that is what opens up so many doors. And when I run masterminds, it's similar. So I'm trying to get people on the same page to think about their own networks. So the reason the book is about how to successfully launch a new offer, no matter the size of your email list, because yes, I do believe we should develop our email lists. Like, I'm a proponent of that, but we all feel like it's inadequate to the task. Like, our results are never where we want them to be. And we feel like we're all waiting for the next. And by the way, you could be at 2000 and want 5,000. You could be at 5,000 and want 10,000. You could be at 10,000 and want 40,000. Like,
right.
No one feels like they're there yet. And so how do we think about this is, I have a whole process I call Wake Up Your Network, where you go through either your LinkedIn list or your Facebook list or your phone contacts list, your email contacts list, something, and you identify people that you enjoyed getting to know, that would remember you years later. Like, these are people that you know you had a good connection back when you knew each other well, and you'd welcome hearing from them out of the blue. And then you have to do sort of this little metrics thing where you're trying to figure out, you know, how well is your connection? How strong is their influence? And how strong is their interest? So their connection is obvious, right? How strong is their connection to you? Would they quickly answer your email or your call? Their influence is interesting to think about, because if they have you have a lot of influence, right? You run a whole community. So you have great influence. So by me reaching out to you, I'm also thinking about you as a referral partner, not just as a prospect, even though you might be both. I want to be thinking about you as a referral partner. But then someone else might have low influence. High on the interest side.
Right.
And that person is a likely prospect. So, And then there are other people who the numbers that you add them up across, like, they don't rank very high at all for anything. So you just kind of drop those people off the list for now, and you look at them again later. And then some people are going to end up being coffee chats. So in the end, you end up with likely prospects, likely referral partners, and coffee chats. And coffee chats are, you're like, I'm so excited I remembered so-and-so. And they don't fit neatly into a category right now, but I would love to reconnect with them. Hmm. That energy is so important when you're starting a new thing. I think that, like, having someone who already thought of well of you and reminds you about a time you were really competent, and who knows, they might end up being a prospect, they might be a referral partner, but it gets a chance for you to practice what it is you're talking about in a low stress environment. You're not pitching anyone, you know, it's just,
right.
Hey, what have you been up to? Yeah, well, I'm actually working on this new thing. Like, it's just a coffee chat, it's chill. And I think getting a few of those kind of done and figuring out our systems for tracking, you know, how we're going to keep track of the messages that we have, and also even a calendar system, if you don't already have one set up for booking online quickly, like, working that all out with coffee chats would be helpful. So for me, it's like, start by doing this assessing. And with my coaching clients, I've always set a goal that they should find 100 people. And I'm actually working on this for my book and these pop-up masterminds that I'm doing this fall. And I've set the bar at 50, but I also know that the effort it takes to make 50, you'll end up finding 200. Like, the goal is to get started. And then the question is, well, what do you do? How do you engage this list of contacts you've identified?
Right.
And that's where you get into research calls and, you know, listening and identifying problem language and then eventually piloting. So I think that first step is so critical, and it's a missed step, that wake up your network part. I actually lost a client because we worked together for a year and she signed up for another 6-month package and we met for the deep dive, and I had given her homework at the end of the last 6 months that she do this. And she said, Robbie, I have to tell you that I got a job offer for making those calls. Now, she's an entrepreneur and was not looking to get hired. And she gave all the reasons for why she didn't want to get hired. And they kept throwing more and more into it. Like, you can have your business still, whatever pay you want, whatever hours you want, travel budget. I mean, like, sweeten the deal to the point where she just couldn't say no. And she ended up not continuing her coaching with me because she landed this role. And why did she land it? She became top of mind to someone in her network who had a need because she reached out to him for a coffee chat.
It's so powerful.
He responded by like offering her a job.
Unexpected result.
Yes.
I love that you teach this. I teach something very similar. I love the words that you placed, but, and you tell me, this is what most people resist the most. They just don't want to contact and they don't know what to say when they do. What do you tell your clients if you get that level of resistance?
Well, I get resistance on a few levels. One is I work with experts, and experts have what I call expert syndrome. They know exactly the solution that people need. They can read the situation and they're like, oh, I know what you need. Problem is, the person they're talking to does not know what they need. And so it's a mismatch. So if you have someone who's symptom aware, not yet problem aware, and you're selling them a solution, they think it's disproportionate to their need. You're not talking to them and they move on. And so experts go and create courses and programs and packages in a vacuum with no input from likely prospects and are miserable by the results. So rather than do that, taking the time to have conversations with people, not to pitch your plans, tell them your program, how many weeks, none of that, but just say, here's the overall sort of general sense of things I'm thinking about. I'd love to hear your feedback about it. I feel like you'd be a person who have a lot of great insights. What's your experience been? And in fact, if you can come with three problems or three questions or three scenarios that we could just talk through, and then instead of solving quickly those three things, then spending some time helping them understand, like, why did you pick these three? Like, are they more urgent? How are they impacting your life? What have you tried? What do you think would work? Like, really helping them start to see how these fit into our larger problem and avoiding the mistake that we all make, which is to give away an hour's worth of free advice.
Yeah.
We've all done that. And then we're shocked that no one comes and buys from us. But here's what I think happens, Bill. If I give you an hour's worth of free advice, I feel awesome. You're feeling pretty good. But in reality, you're not going to actually implement an hour's worth of free advice because I didn't help you prioritize. I didn't tell you which thing to start with. I just like loaded your brain with tons of 20 ideas. And so you keep having it written on your to-do list, but you never really get to done. And you start feeling kind of bad about it. And then you see me online or you see me in an event and you're like, oh, I should... And you want to like avoid me because what if I asked you about it? And instead of reaching out to me, you don't want to bother me because you still feel like you want to follow through on all the free advice I already gave you. So then even if you need help, you ask somebody else. What? That is the exact opposite of what we want our prospects to do. So I have I'll tell you this moment in my head. I have this moment in my head where I'm talking to someone. It could be a coffee chat. It could be a sales call. It doesn't matter. Where I suddenly realize my brain is exploding with ideas for them. And I've already given them, let's say, one or two kind of like big picture things to think about. Here's what I think might be going on. What do you think? Kind of questions.
Yeah.
And I'll say, wow, I have a lot of ideas in my head that I could share right now because you sound a lot like the clients that I work with. Hey, would you like to hear what it would be like for us to work together? And that invitation, that permission-based, like, let's go to the next stage, it frames the conversation immediately. I'm now a guide or a mentor or an expert coach, and they're a person who's considering whether or not they want to work with me. So of course they're going to say yes, because I've already given them something to think about. And then I then share an outcome. Well, here's someone that comes to mind. Here's how we work together, and here's the results they achieved. 2-minute story. Are those the kind of results? Is that the kind of outcome you're looking for? They're like, whoa, you're in my head. Like, this is totally, have you been reading my journal? If they say that, then it's like, okay, would you like to hear a little bit about how we would do this? And now, of course, they're sitting on the edge of their seat. So again, I don't go into the super details. I'm like, well, you know, I have either group or one-on-one. Like, what is your preference right now? Are you looking to go fast and like individualized attention, or you like the idea of having community support, group accountability? And they tell me, and then I might say, okay, well, here's a general structure. You know, is that every 2 weeks, whatever the rhythm is? And then they're like, yeah. So meanwhile, I'm looking for yeses. I'm looking for lots of yeses. It's a whole series of yeses, right? And then I'm like, I've explained the whole thing to them. I've dealt with any known reasons like they might say no. So if I'm worried about how much time it's going to take, I talk about that and I handle that. If I think about the like whether the outcome is going to be right for them, we talk about that. We talk about all these things. And then I've talked about everything except for the money. And I just say, is there anything else? Let me know. What else would you like to know? And then eventually they'll say, well, there's no way I'm able to afford this. Like, you know, how much is this, Robbie? And I'm like, well, it is an investment. You know, it's about working on your business. But, you know, 18 months from now, you could be well on your way to that goal you just were talking about. What would be possible if that were happening? And they'll tell me. And then I'll ask 2 or 3 more questions about their big dream of what would be possible. And I said, okay, well, with that in mind, here's the investment. And I got to tell you, I only work with people who are really going to do the work. So that's something for you to think about for yourself. And I don't even want an answer right now. I want you to go and sit with this, because I know the number one reason people are successful is because they commit to doing the work. So you can call me back in 15 minutes, or we can schedule time 2 days from now. But, you know, I want you to sit with this, because your outcome is based on your own effort.
No, Robbie, I'd like you to take my credit card right now. I don't even know what you're selling, and I'm ready to buy it.
But it's just like, you just, I don't want their sale. Like, I'm not needy about it. I'm not begging. I have an offer. It's a gift I'm making. I'm like, here's the gift. And I'm telling them that the work is all on them. I will guide them, but it's their business, right? And even if I give them advice in the middle of that call, I'm like, listen, I got to point something out. We've been talking about this for 15 minutes. There's no way I know enough to diagnose you. What's going on here accurately? I'm merely able to give you some ideas. Please do not take this as a diagnosis. There are so much more, which leaves the door open for them to come back to me when they run into trouble. I'm like, listen, there's no way that what I'm telling you is perfect. Like, let's just be real. We've talked about it for 15 minutes. So I want to leave myself as a resource to them, not the person they avoid when they see online or see in person. So yeah.
Excellent. Repeat. Yeah. And it's not about closing the deal at that phone call sometimes, right? You're just delivering the value.
Well, I have to say, Bill, that's the thing that separates us from a lot of people in the online marketing world, because there's a lot of people selling you on the need to make it a sell that moment. It's all about scarcity and all that stuff, which is how we've all ended up buying courses and programs that we don't actually end up using.
Right.
And that doesn't benefit anyone except the person who was, you know, the huckster who was selling that. So, I more want them to walk away thinking about the cost of inaction. So I mentioned earlier, Bill, I'll go through all the stages. This is actually originally was written about in a book in 1966. I'm blanking on the marketing book. But I heard about it from Danny Inney, who's runs a company called Miracy, which is where I was working in 2019 and 2020, coaching entrepreneurs. And then I heard a variation of this from Jason Van Orden, who is the host of the Internet Business Mastery. So people are symptom aware, right? Then they are problem aware. Then they're solution aware.
Okay.
then they're you aware, and then they're now aware. So if they have, let's say you had an itchy arm, you kept getting a rash. It would go away, it comes back, go away, and come back. So you come to me, and I take a look at it, and I'm immediately realizing what it is. But you're coming to me, and you have an idea of what the remedy is. You're like, I would like some anti-itch cream, please. So that's your understanding of the problem. And I look at you, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is poison ivy. You're coming in contact with poison ivy on a regular basis, and it keeps happening. And I'm asking you questions, and we come to determine that it's all over your backyard. So I reach for the phone number of a guy I know who has a bulldozer, and I hand it to you. And I tell you, you need to go and just like clear and raise your entire backyard to dirt and start over again. And that's how you're going to solve this problem. But you came to me looking for anti-itch cream.
Right.
You are not interested in my solution. It is a disproportionate response to what they... So instead, you've got to walk people through, well, what do you think the problem is? What have you tried? What else could you try? Okay, well, why don't you try that and come back? You know, okay, you know, and then help them start to realize, wow, this is a bigger problem than I thought it was. This is a big P problem, not a little P problem. I need a better solution. Robbie seemed to know a lot about this. Oh, Robbie's the person I should go to. You aware. Robbie's the person I should go talk to. And the now aware is the cost of an action. The urgency is now. Now that I realize that I have this problem and I have this possible solution, how could I not move forward? What if I don't do this? Then this will keep happening. And I'm no longer head in my sand about it. I know why this is happening. So, and I've tried on my own. And I know how far I can get on my own. And I know that there's a limit. And I know I want to go further than that. So I want to go further than that. And then I got to work with Robbie. Well, how is Robbie going to help me? And then they come to you asking for a solution. So there's not even a sales call. It's just the working out the details.
Yeah. And it sounds like that's something that it can be done with a conversation or even just with sales copy, or when, if you're yes. keeping that process in mind, you can build your brochures, your website, everything around meeting people where they are. If you have that in your mind.
Right now I am in the process of setting up these pop-up masterminds. Mm. They are a one-time 2-hour, 8-person session around a topic. The topic being how to successfully launch a new offer, no matter the size of your email list, because that's my book. And that's what I'm working on right now, right?
Right.
So there's pre-work. Oh, and by the way, it's $100. So this is not the offer, right? This is like, I just want to get people to have some skin in the game. The pre-work is where they do that assessing of their network and they start discovering all these likely prospects and these likely referral partners. So they come in to the call now like, oh, wow, I actually have people. Now I'm really at this confused point. What do I do with them? And so we're going to talk through, how do you approach? What do you write? How do you follow up? How do you structure the call? Just how do you set up a calendar link? Whatever it is, right? Just get people to the point of, okay, you now know there's something you can do. Now, people will then go on their own and try to do some stuff. But then my book comes out, and my book will walk them through more of the process. And then I have 3 free masterclasses coming up later in the fall, which goes further into the details of the book. And at some point, there are going to be people who initially work with me, you know, this September, that are going to actually come across the inkling of an idea that they think actually has legs. And they're going to want it to actually happen. And the idea of it not happening is going to be more painful than the cost of writing a check to me. And next year, I'm running a year-long program to help people follow through on all of that in groups. So initially, the group's going to be focused on a cohort of entrepreneurial women, 50 plus. And then I'm going to have a second cohort for everyone who does not identify as a part of that demographic. And anyone who comes in ready to go and do the work is absolutely going to get to the end of the year with a revenue stream, either figured out or a process that they can rinse and repeat to get the right offer, right? They will learn a ton doing that. But I need to lead people from symptom aware, symptom being I have a small email list, which is why I can't sell anything. That's a symptom. That's not actually a huge problem, right? The problem is that they're limiting how they think about who their audience is, and they're not testing before they sell. They're building and trying to sell to the marketplace who doesn't care. So once I make them aware of that disconnect, well, now they're going to look for a solution. They're going to try it on their own. They're going to see the limitations of that. And not all people, but some people are going to be like, wow, actually, I'd like to do this for real.
Yeah.
So the entire course of the fall for me is about moving people from symptom aware to problem aware to solution aware to me aware to now aware. And like you said, it could be in your marketing material, it could be your emails, it could be brochure, it could be in what programs you offer for free or for low cost.
Well, I love the, I love that whole process, but I love that you are providing a service that, in, for lack of a better word, holds somebody's hand through a extremely confusing process. Because if you just jump on Google and say, start an online course or develop an online product, you're inundated with material. And a lot of it's good and a lot of it is not. But then jumping in and trying to put all the moving pieces together is so overwhelming. So you're like this beacon of light to people and giving them support. I love the concept. Now, I believe that probably everybody who's listening to this Side Hustle Lounge podcast either has a book idea or a business idea or an online product idea inside. Somewhere it's been percolating for years for some of them, but they don't know necessarily how to identify it. So I have two questions for you. The first one is, do you have a methodology to help people identify a product so they could be prepared to join your mastermind?
Yes. Actually, on my website, robbysamuels.com/masterclass, I have a series of free masterclasses that I developed a few years back. And one of them is called Discover Your Ideal Client. Because I don't think it's actually about figuring out what to offer. It's figuring out who to offer it to. So it's a Venn diagram. And mostly, we think about these Venn diagrams as the Venn is what to sell. And I'm saying the Venn is who to sell to. And the process is about discovering, because these people are already coming to you for support and service and guidance, right? And you're just not thinking about them in the way that you could be. And if you don't approach this correctly, you end up in certain pitfalls. It could become a hobby. It become a trap where you're doing work that you don't really know very well.
Yeah.
But you're working real hard. It could be burnout because you're doing things that aren't the expertise that you want to be known for. It's really about thinking that process through. And then once you start to have a better sense of who your audience is, then the next stage is to go and have conversations with them. And within some parameter of, this is the stuff I know about, ask them what their challenges are. Do everything we talked about earlier, right? What are your three questions? And then tease that out and then transcribe that. And Zoom now has the ability to have transcription enabled. It's free. Yeah. And so when you get the recording, you get the full transcript. To going through that, looking for problem statements, putting that all in a spreadsheet, identifying levels of urgency, categorizing. I mean, it's a process. I've worked with a lot of coaches through this. No one's been excited about it. A lot of them have resisted for a number of different reasons, from I'm an expert already to I have no one to talk to. So there's two extremes. But those that have gone through this process fully have been surprised by learning things. Some of them, it's not that they learned something new about what people needed, because they really are experts. They really did know that. But they learned something about language. So let's say I was offering something and I kept talking about people being, you know, I work with women who are fatigued, and I kept using the word fatigued, but I never once on these calls hear that word. Instead, I have a lot of people talking about being exhausted, right? Mm. Tired, exhausted. Well, then I should stop using the word fatigued and switch it to exhausted. Like, then people will read the copy or hear it and be like, oh, you're talking to me. So sometimes it's these little tweaks. And I've been working with a coaching client right now who's basically thrown out her initial idea and is now developing kind of a related idea that she didn't think she could do. Like part of the reason she never pursued it is because she just didn't have full belief in herself. But when it became apparent that people needed this, like she's now still transcribing and categorizing and all this stuff, but she's going to put out a pilot offer and test it. And I also think what's great about testing in this way is that you haven't sunk a ton of money and time in, so you don't feel precious about it. And right. if you have to scrap it or change it or whatever, you don't feel like, but I can. I've already spent $20,000 of that company that helped me create my thing and branding. And like some of these people, like you go hire someone, they'll go through your content and they'll find a course for you to sell, but they're not going to help you find an audience. Like, so I think the first part is find the audience, because if you have a great idea for an audience that you have no access to, then you don't have a great idea.
That's really good perspective. I love that you start there. And it just reminded me that one of the great copywriters I've worked with in the past, Ray Edwards, I took a mastermind with him, and he even took it a little bit further. And he said that know who you're going to sell to first, but then also, what do you want your life to look like? Because when I learned this lesson the hard way, sometimes you do have a good idea. You have a product that people will buy, but then your life servicing that product is not what you might picture it to do. So if you kind of fast forward yourself 2 or 3 years down the road, what do you want your life to look like? You can reverse engineer it and make sure there's alignment there.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because those of us that are maybe still working and doing a side hustle, we dream of being full entrepreneurs, full-time entrepreneurs. But you're just trading in 40 hours of work with, you know, your side hustle to 100 hours of work on your business. That's not freedom. And, you know, like my 2020, I never want to repeat that schedule again. Like that was holding on mm-hmm. for dear life, working that many hours. And I have the most like supportive and understanding spouse ever. I have two little kids, you know, so it's not sustainable. It was a moment in time. It was necessary. It was a boot camp experience is how I thought of it. but it's not how I want to design my life. So this year, 2021 has all been about sort of designing my life differently, being thoughtful about what I say yes and no to, and making sure it's aligned with like one of my goals and all those things, just being better about passing along offers to other people if it's not a right fit for me. But when you're hungry and you're determined, you end up almost overcommitting and it's not all aligned. And then you're not known for anything. No one can refer you if you're not known for a particular, if you do everything, you're not known for anything. So it kind of shoots you in the foot. It's not a good strategy. And I think it's so hard to step back. It's really hard. So what I really like about Waking Up Your Network is that it gives you like a different perspective, that there are people that you have connections with, that you could be having these conversations.
Yeah, and pressure-free conversations. Right?
So even if you just listened on...
Pressure-free conversations. It's not about selling anything.
Pressure-free.
Necessarily.
Once you figure out what do you think it is you want to sell based on these calls, you then want to figure out the outcome that you think people are looking for. Right? So you make your best guess as to what you could describe, a 1-2 sentence statement. You know, at the end of the time that we work together, you will be able to, or you will experience whatever it is. And then you want to contact a handful of 6 to 10 of the people that you had calls with and ask to run stuff past them. Be like, this is a particular thing you said, and you can repeat it verbatim in the email because you transcribed it. That's really resonated with me and it stuck with me as I was developing this. And I'd love to run, I'm still working on this, but I'd love to run it past you in this point in the process. I mean, who wouldn't want to offer their advice? Everyone wants, sure. And then you're like, okay, get on the call and you're like, all right, here's the outcome that here's my promise that people working with me will achieve. Like, let me run this past you. And then you just ask them, like, what do you think? And you listen to them. Like, either they're going to be like, wow, you're totally in my head, or they're going to be like, yeah, and they're going to give you feedback. Now, grain of salt, everything from one person. But if you hear from 6 people that it's not working, like, you got to tweak things. And then you also can say, here's a general outline of the program. It's going to be 4, 5, or 6 sessions. It's going to, whatever. So, and then you just kind of get yeses from them. Like, yeah, that would work. And then you're like, there's a reason I really reached out to you is I think you'd be a great fit for this pilot. Not only does it sound like it's aligned, I wasn't sure until I talked to you, but now it seems like it's really aligned with what you're looking for. because they just told you that. And I would love your ongoing feedback. So in exchange, I'm going to give you this huge discount, right? The program is normally going to be whatever, and here it's going to be 50% or less. And, you know, I'd love you to join. What do you think? And then you get quiet, and then it's usually not a huge dollar amount, you know, comparatively. You can usually get someone to say, yeah, that sounds like something I want to do. And that's how you find your first 6, 8, no more than 12 people to run a pilot with for a handful of weeks, get their feedback and iterate from there.
Excellent.
So you're never building something from scratch. You're building it always with them. Co-creation.
That's perfect segue into my, might be my last question for you. And I love that you titled the book Small List, Big Results. I think one of the biggest quote unquote insecurities is that our lists are too small. There's so many people who just, number one, don't even recognize that they have a list, but they believe that it's too small. So what advice do you have to the person who might have an idea, but they're not willing to move forward on it because they don't think they know enough people?
I think doing the wake up your network exercise would be really, really helpful. You know, the idea of just making a list of people and then figuring out their connection to you, their influence in the world, their interest, and then developing like a list of people to reach out to from that would be a great first step for everybody. Even people who have a pretty strong offer and it's going well, people get stuck because they've stopped. It's all word of mouth. I mean, a lot of people are just haven't developed really strong marketing systems. They're so busy executing. This will help you discover a whole new realm of people that you could reach out to. And you may be able to then develop some sort of marketing system that is more automated based on these results. If you already have a proven method, if you already have copy that sells, then you can start to do things like Facebook ads. But prior to that, it's like flushing money. I mean, just give me your money then. Like, I'll spend it on coffee or something. I don't know. But like, it's silly how people spend money on things that are not proven yet as a tactic. So I would start with that. And as far as email lists, I mean, I think they're important. I think that you have a network that goes well beyond it, though. You know, keep figuring out how to develop your network. Keep thinking about how you can build your email list by offering great gifts or lead magnets. But yeah, don't worry about that so much, because you will build the right email list if you offer something of value to the right people.
Great. And I think, too, we underestimate the size of our list too. Maybe we just we talk to the same 10 people over and over repeatedly, and we lose sight of the true size of our network. So I think if you look through your phone contacts, your Facebook messages, even your Facebook friends, your Instagram, and all of your emails, you really get a different picture for how big your network is. And if you handwrite your list on a legal pad, which I did when I first started really scaling up my business, my hand started to hurt. It wasn't, I was like striving to reach 100. No, it's all of a sudden I've got thousands that I have to write on this list. I'm like, man, why do I talk to so many people? I'm trying to scale it back.
This is where spreadsheets and Google Sheets make sense. I also just want to note something. You loved my title, and I will tell you that I workshop that title with my likely readers. I had a title in mind, and I put it out to a few Facebook communities that had my ideal readers. And initially it was Small List, Big Ambition. And I discovered that women over 45 do not identify with the word ambition.
Interesting.
And since I want to attract that audience, it didn't matter that people under 45 did. And so we had, then for a moment it was goals, Small List, Big Goals. And then someone said, I got plenty of goals. What I want is results. And then I put that out into the world. And all of a sudden people were like, yes, you nailed. Bob Berg, who was the co-author of The Go-Giver, said that I nailed the problem and the solution and the outcome that people want in 4 words.
Nice.
Problem is, I have a small list. What I want results. Is big results. So if I had done this without that input, I would have written a book and had a title that did not identify with people that needed it. And so nothing should be created in a vacuum. And by the way, that's all marketing too. Now I have all these people who are waiting right. to have my book come out. You know, they're all going to join my launch team. They're all going to get early access to the book. I'm actually offering a librarian-led book club discussion for people who join my, awesome. My launch team.
Good thinking.
So, I'm full of surprises this fall, Bill.
I can't wait to see it all coming. Please include me on your launch team too. I loved your first book and I'm going to look forward to this one too. You know, you've mentioned a couple things along our conversation and you just touched on it again, is this sometimes emotional attachment that we get to titles, to concepts, to ideas, especially when they've been around for a while. You might think this is going to be the title of my book or this is what the course is going to be about. And when you get contradicting information, how do you let go of that? Is it just a switch for you? Like, whoop, the data says this, so I'm going to switch it. Or do you have to walk yourself through some, whether it's ego or just the emotion of letting go of some of that stuff?
If one person gives me feedback, it's one person, you know, but if you start to see a trend, and I try to get this information from people before I've locked into it, you know, now that I've gone through this process, I'm pretty committed to the title that I have. I was actually debating whether it would say like how to successfully or just start with successfully in the subtitle. And I've just determined it will just start with, you know, like, you know, little things, but I'm pretty locked in now. So now I will not be as open to the feedback, but I had a few weeks there there was one week in particular where I just was getting tons of information. And I'm doing that same process right now with the pre-work workbook that I give out to people for my pop-up mastermind. I was developing the content and then the cover. And so I sent it to a few people and quickly was iterating. Like finally I had to figure out how to share the Canva link so that I didn't have to keep downloading updated PDFs for people who are sending me feedback. But it's just, you know, I want this to really work for people. And so getting that feedback and iterating, but then, you know, at some point it's done. And, you know, let me know if you see a typo kind of thing. But other than that, like I'm not looking to revamp it.
If anybody listening would like to get dialed into Robbie and his masterminds, I've got a whole section inside the VIP room where you can do so at www.sidehustlelounge.com. Robbie, if a listener would like to join your masterminds or even your year-long mastermind, how does that work? Does it have a start and an end time for enrollment, or is that a year-long enrollment?
Yeah, so I'm doing the pop-up masterminds are these two-hour, one-time offer for $100. That's just a little taste. I'm doing at early access. The actual deadline of that has already passed. But that was, again, for me to soft test this with a small community of people. I got 24 people signed up very quickly, and I was like, okay, this is a thing. And then starting in September, I was broadcasting it to the world. And so I'm basically filling 8 sessions of 8 people each. And when this airs, you'll still be time for you to go check out the link in the VIP section, because the deadline to sign up for one of those is September 15th. So you can go check that out, and then we can get you filled in for one of the slots that's coming up. And then my year-long program, I'll be really making the offer for that in November. And there's some early signing bonuses where it's 10 monthly mastermind sessions, and at least 2 and up to 5 one-on-one calls with me. And so the additional one-on-one calls are for people who sign up early. So if you're like, I don't need to wait all fall to know this is the thing for me. You basically go to my website, robbiesamuels.com, go to the coaching section, you fill out a little form, we schedule a call. If you're sold on it, and I think it's a good fit too, the sooner you sign up, the more bonuses you get. You get an additional one-on-one call from me. So it's like basically the end of, you know, September 1, October 1, November 1 are all deadlines to get additional bonuses.
Awesome, Robbie. Well, I can tell that you're going to be bring so much value to the community and for anybody who has that idea churning inside. So I can't wait to see where you go with this. Thank you so much for spending so much of your time and sharing your ideas and inspiration with us.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Side Hustle Lounge podcast. You know, if you follow me on Instagram and social media, you already know that my pets play a huge role in my life, and I include them as part of the family. They are part of my why. Dexter and Violet bring so much joy and love into my life that I always want to make sure that they are well tended to and healthy. That's where my Toto pet insurance policy comes in. Toto was voted best pet insurance company in 2021 by Forbes Advisor, and it's known as the pet insurance company with a heart and without the gotchas. There's no network of obscure vets that I'm forced to choose from, so I get to pick my pet's doctor. And then, depending on the policy I select, I can be reimbursed up to 90% of the vet bill. And they make it easy to use. You visit any vet, you submit a claim, you get cash back. It's pet insurance, finally done right. If you'd like to support the show, get coverage for your own fur babies, and maybe even give yourself some peace of mind at the same time, get an instant quote today on Toto's easy-to-use website at sidehustlelounge.com/Toto. That's T-O-T-O.